Oh no.
Welcome to the Exponent 2 podcast. This is Carol Ann calling in from Minneapolis. I'm here with Ramona.
Hi guys, it's a public holiday.
What holiday are
Okay.
you celebrating in Barbados?
Oh, it's National Heroes Day, which is not that, interesting. But we just got a new national hero. So Rihanna is our new national hero in Barbados.
Whoa.
So
Amazing. So it's Umbrella Day, Ella, Ella.
it's
Ha
Ella Day, I should put
Wait,
some
and
Rihanna
how do you
music on.
choose? Yeah. Wait, so is it like each year a new hero is announced, or how does this?
No. So
Okay.
like for the longest time we had no new national heroes, but just because of Rihanna's contribution to music and
Yeah.
here in Barbados and stuff like that, they recommended her to be a national hero, and it went off. She is.
I
I
like that
love
it's
it.
kind
This
of
is Rihanna's
specific
day.
like that. Yeah. So I'm thinking like the US is like President's Day, like so we have like MLK and Memorial Day, but Heroes Day. Interesting. Maybe
Yeah,
we
big
fight too much.
hero. Got a lot of dude days in America.
Yeah.
Weird coincidence how A
that
lot
works.
of dude days.
Oh, don't worry. There's a Women's History Month. No. Wow, wow, wow.
Poorly observed.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm also here with Heather calling in
Hey, hey.
from.
I am calling in from the Walmart parking lot in Payson, Utah. I've been on a road trip down to Vegas and just made a little detour to do the podcast.
Thank you, Heather. And we have a special guest. We are with M, blogger M, EM. Where are you calling in from, M?
Woo-hoo! I am calling in from Eugene, Oregon. So we have got four time zones covered today.
Woo-hoo!
Yes,
Coast
we
to coast.
do.
Sea to shining sea, almost.
Just about. I'm about 50 miles from the ocean, but I could get there. Give me an hour.
Awesome. Okay, so we have blogger M on the show. We reached out to the bloggers and said, hey, who wants to read one of their favorite pieces they've written? And then we'll talk about it. So we're going to, the rest of us will mute ourselves. Oh, but let's take a minute. What have you been reading to, listening, sorry, listening to or reading lately?
Hang on, before we do that, I
Yeah.
just want to give a little plug about M as a blogger.
Oh, thank you.
So most bloggers have like a flavor. Like they're, oh, so and so's like the wacky one, or so and so's like they kind of do this historic stuff. M goes all over the place and does it
Ooh.
all really well. And she is like one of the funniest people and one of the smartest and really astute. So I just have to get that out there that you're going to get a little flavor of M, and then you're going to think you know her, but don't. Do a deep
Love
dive on her blog posts and you'll thank me. You will thank me.
it.
I was going to say
Yeah.
this is
No,
not funny. If we're looking for funny, this is not it. I know, but that's what I'm saying is because people are going to hear this and think, oh, M is a serious one. And I'm like, no, M is hysterical. Like, and people need both of those things.
We'll
Okay,
have to have M on another time for the
just share
yeah,
it. Say
today.
I have been the agony aunt for for many years. I had a false advice column for the Exponent, and I
Love
was
it.
see.
Love it. We'll have to get the best ofs for that or get a new one going for the podcast. But yeah, so the topic, so M gave me a couple options and we're choosing a little bit of a heavy one. Abortion. So trigger warning, content warning. I don't know if trigger's the right word to even use anymore. Content warning is abortion. And M is a historian, has a PhD, and wrote some pieces a couple years ago about abortion in early Utah. That might have some relevance to today. So the rest of oh, but sorry, we're gonna go fun for a minute. We keep forgetting. I keep forgetting. What have you been reading, listening to, podcast, music, reading? What's up?
Well, I'm not sure
Oops.
who we're asking first. This is M. I'm a true crime junkie, and so I have been listening to like every minute of the trial of Chad Daybell. I don't know if anyone else has followed this story, but I love that. I mean, that's a bad thing to say that I love that case, but it's so interesting. it is extremely interesting. So I have been listening to that testimony a lot as I do my chores. It's really, really a bonkers case. And then also as a member of the church, I feel like there's so many moments of like, ooh.
Yeah. I haven't listened lately, but I listened to the like Mormon Stories interview with the other like about the cases a couple from a couple months ago, and I was like, this is bonkers. the near death experience stuff, I was like, holy cannoli, I can't even. Yeah. So
So.
heavy, but super fascinating. And like, yeah, the reflections on like, where am I? What is,
And I think my one little tidbit for, since you're like, what fun are we having? The defense attorney kept saying bishopric, bishopric. Like, you
Amazing.
were in the bishopric.
Oh,
And I was like, yes.
no.
From now on, we will be
I love
discussing Annette.
it.
Oh, we have a bishopric
Bishopric.
meeting.
Stop it.
That's amazing. I
I
noticed when I
love
was living
it.
in Boise, Idaho, people call Zion, or like, not Zion, Zion National Park. Like, and I'm
Oh,
like,
yeah.
oh, is that Zion? Like, I grew up Zion's
Yeah, I
National
would say
Park. So I'd be like,
Zion, but yeah.
Zion. I'm like,
Yeah.
yeah, okay.
No, that's like me when I was in Utah the last time. Somebody was saying, oh, it's hurricane. And I was like, no,
Oh,
it's
calm.
hurricane. Hurricane. And they're like, I was like, do you see a plantain or plantain? Like, so I am like, please pronounce your words. Utah, please pronounce your words properly.
Well, I heard the BBC once talking about Boise, Idaho, and they called it Boise.
Ooh,
Boise.
amazing.
Oh, that's like
That's
me when
very
I'm
chic.
shopping at that's me like when I'm shopping at Shein and I'm like Shion to make it sound really fancy.
Ramona, what are you reading? What are you watching?
I'm watching a lot of Amazon Prime. I got an Amazon Prime membership. No plugs. Please sponsor us if you hear this, please sponsor us.
Stay
Thank
away
you. We
from
need
us,
money.
Jeff Bezos.
I'm just doing it for us, Bezos. But like I have just been reading a lot of schoolwork, honestly, being super
Yeah.
boring, reading a lot of visa applications for my job. I bought the Bridgerton book yesterday. I was at the store trying to call my friends, trying to figure out like, should I buy this? Should I not buy this? So I bought it just because I have illegal copies, and just to make my guilt go away, I just was like, I'm
Okay.
just gonna buy the legal copy.
Okay.
But other than that, I've been just listening to a lot of music, like music that's really like uplifting, like R&B, like those neo soul sort of things. I've just been listening to everything.
I love it. Speaking of
All right.
pirates, and way to not be pirating anymore, I read Rachel Ruckert's If the Tide Turns, and she came to Minneapolis and did a book talk at my neighborhood bookstore. So that was really fun.
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah, so it's great to have her here for a little bit. But I also
I
want,
read.
like, oh, go ahead.
Oh, I said I read it too. It was good.
Yeah, it was funny reading
I have
reviews.
a.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Go
Oh,
ahead. Go
I
ahead.
use the app Storygraph to like mark my books that I read. Just to be anti-Amazon a little bit more and not do Goodreads. Anyway, it was funny reading some of the comments. Someone was like, given the cover, I thought it'd be more of a fantasy historical fiction. And I was like, oh, like, isn't the trope, don't judge a book by its cover? Why did, like, still laughing at that. But my confession is that I'm actually on my county, so our library system is by the county. And I am on their bad list because I have so many overdue books because I was in a book club for War and Peace and I borrowed the book. So I am no longer allowed to check out more books until I've returned some of my overdue books. The other long book I'm reading right now is The Covenant of Water, which is really long and it's been great to read, but like, sorry, library, you're not going to get it for a while because I'm a busy human. Haha. So just laughing at.
Caroline is ready to go to library jail.
I know, and you, like, past me feel so guilty, but I've been like, they'll get their book someday. That other person who really wants it gets to wait a little bit longer and is enjoying another book right now, and it's
My
okay.
God. Yeah. Like
Letting
in
go.
positive news, yeah, in positive news, like I passed. I've been taking Spanish for like since January through my Venezuelan embassy here in Barbados, and I passed basic level one.
Congrats. Nice. Muy
Wow.
bien.
I still can't speak it right off the top of my head, but I'm trying.
Yeah,
Trying.
that's awesome.
That's good. So, this is
Heather.
Heather, and what I listened to recently that I really liked and recommend is the Faith Matters podcast, episode 211, Come As You Are. It's an interview with this British couple who do FSY camps and stuff, and they really do a great job of breaking down some of the differences between
the older church builder generation and what that mindset was and how it does not work for the youth of today.
Ooh,
And
fascinating.
it's really
Ooh.
good. Like, it's if you like Elder Kieran, if you liked his talk, if you like Uchtdorf, if you're part of the inclusive, no sad heaven, no empty chairs brand of Mormonism, then you would like this.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna take a listen to that. As somebody who's been an FSY counselor, just dealing with the youth and
Yeah, you would love
hearing
it.
some of their complex situations and realizing that the church doesn't always appeal to them. And going as a chaperone now for FSY this year, probably, I am definitely gonna give that a listen.
Yeah, you'll love it. You will. It'll really
Awesome.
speak to you.
Let's
All right.
thanks for that lead. Let's get going.
Okay.
Em, we're going to
All
mute
right.
ourselves so we get to hear your research and words for this blog. Also, we'll put a link in the notes, but it's called, oh yeah. Em will announce it. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I will announce it. Onward. So it is called 19th Century Abortion in Utah, Part One, because there is a part two, which we are not reading tonight. And I also just sort of as a side note for my own integrity or whatever, I do have a PhD in history and I did focus on 19th century reproductive history, but my specific area is actually France, not Utah. I'm not an Americanist. So I got into this more as like this particular post was just because I was really curious and interested and I wanted to find out like what was going on in Utah. This is not like my, I've gone years of research on this. So just take that for what it is worth. Okay. And also I wrote this right before Roe v. Wade was rolled back. They had leaked a little bit of an opinion, but they had not yet rolled back Roe v. Wade, as I recall, was the context of me writing this. Okay. The abortion debate currently raging in the United States creates a false dichotomy, as though the two sides are enthusiasm for drive-through abortion at 39 weeks on one side, or women should never have health care that they need on the other. The data show that most Americans have a much more nuanced view than the terms pro-life or pro-choice seem to allow. This is true even within the church among members who are trying to follow clearly stated church policies. Some members interpret, quote, only in cases of rape, incest, or life of the mother, end quote, to mean this needs to be legal so that these cases can get the help they need. Others interpret it to mean we should make abortions very difficult to get because in most cases it is morally wrong. The historical views of abortion within the church are similarly more complex than they might at first appear. Utah Territory passed a law criminalizing abortion in 1867, penalizing producing a miscarriage, quote, through the use of any medicine, drug, substance, or other means unless done to save her life, end quote. Prominent church leaders of the 19th century likewise inveighed against a practice they saw as analogous to infanticide. And this is President John Taylor from the Journal of Discourses in 1884. Quote, why not do as tens of thousands others do, live in a condition of illicit love? And then, if any child should be feared from this unsanctified union, why not still follow our Christian exemplars, remove the fetal encumbrance, call in some of the copyists of Madame Restelle, the abortionists, male and female, that pollute our land, that would have been sub rosa, genteel, fashionable, respectable, Christian-like, as Christianity goes in this generation. And this next quote is Elder H.W. Nesbitt, also Journal of Discourses, 1885. And if a tree is to be judged by its fruits, what of the whoredoms, the adultery, the fornication, the prostitution of women in monogamic nations? What of sexual diseases, of blighted lives, of martyred women, of little graves dotting every hillside and the resting places of the dead? What of foeticide, infanticide, and abortion? Brigham Young likewise declaimed against population control. The quote that I'm about to read in context doesn't make it perfectly clear whether he was referring to efforts at contraception or abortion, but he condoned neither one. So here's the quote, Journal of Discourses, 1867. That which was practiced then in fear and against a reproving conscience is now boldly trumpeted abroad as one of the best means of ameliorating the miseries and sorrows of humanity. Infanticide is very prevalent in our nation. It is a crime that comes within the purview of the law and is therefore not so boldly practiced as is the other equally great crime, which, no doubt, to a great extent, prevents the necessity of infanticide. Here, that's the part what I mean. It's not clear if it's contraception or abortion. The unnatural style of living, the extensive use of narcotics, the attempts to destroy and dry up the fountains of life are fast destroying the American element of the nation. End quote. The law against abortion, vehemently championed by male leaders, was certainly enforced. Perhaps the most infamous case of the day was Utah v. McCoy. Dr. McCoy was convicted of performing an abortion on Evelyn Bonnet of Provo, who died shortly after complications from the procedure, which brought the whole business to the notice of the authorities. He was sentenced to 8 years imprisonment, a sentence that the Utah Supreme Court upheld in 1897. All of this suggests that the position of the church, as well as the church-dominated local government, was unequivocally against abortion, equating it with the murder of infants already born. However, the words and opinions of powerful men do not necessarily reflect the lived reality of women. Indeed, the fact that powerful men felt the need to make public speeches condemning it at all and to pass and enforce laws forbidding it suggests that what men said and what women did were rather different. The question of abortion was more complicated than the above statements suggest. At the same time that apostles were railing against abortion, abortifacients were widely advertised in Utah newspapers. While some advertisements offered items by mail from other states, many featured products available at local drugstores. One such ad directed readers to the pharmacy owned by John Boylan Farlow, first president of the Utah Pharmaceutical Association and member of the Methodist Episcopalian Church. He was no back alley quack. But perhaps this non-LDS druggist was primarily patronized by women not of our faith. Surely no Mormon woman, excuse me, no Mormon would peddle such wickedness, nor would any LDS woman be so dead to morality as to purchase it, not after hearing what the prophets had to say about it. And I have a little copy in the post. There's a copy of one of the ads. Mesmin's French female pills containing cotton root and pennyroyal, popular abortifacient herbs at the time, were advertised in the Provo Daily Inquirer. Women who were troubled by, quote, irregular menses could find them at Smoot Drug Company. Smoot Drug Company was owned by Reed Smoot, who was a senator representing Utah longer than any other representative, and an apostle who died third in line to the presidency. Again, he was not the villain that typically figured in 19th century cautionary tales about girls who got in trouble. It would be hard to find a more respected citizen of Provo than the proud advertiser of Mesmin's French female pills. Why would an LDS woman hesitate to use a product that was actively promoted by a member of the Quorum of the Twelve? Realistically, Mormon women who felt a need for pennyroyal would, if anything, feel more justified in purchasing it, given that it was sold by a prominent political and church authority. So how can we possibly understand this contradiction? In the 19th century, apostles and prophets very clearly thundered against abortion, not mincing words. Yet at the exact same time, an apostle was selling a product that was designed to end a pregnancy, and the number and variety of advertisements in newspapers throughout Utah suggests there was an eager market of women. Stay tuned for part two.
Amazing great. Reading. Bravo. You need to do more audio, more audiobooks. Thank you. Okay. So, and thanks for giving the context about like the timing of when you wrote the piece. So right before, so some things have been leaked. So what was your reaction? So things have been leaked about the like Roe v. Wade. And why did you focus on Utah? Like obviously church, Mormonism, but had you been thinking about this before as well?
Yes. Also, I wanted to make one side note in that I keep saying Reed Smoot was an apostle. Technically he was ordained as apostle after those appeared in the newspaper, just as like a, yeah. Slight factual. I make some remarks about it in the comments and stuff, but I'm like, since that was the original post, just so we're clear, he was a member of the 70 when he posted that stuff. Okay. So why then? So I was, part of it is I think that there's a huge misunderstanding that you see just in the general public about historical understandings of what abortion was. And we keep seeing the opinion that leaked referred back to William Blackstone. I want to say Gladstone. That's a wrong guy. Who you know sort of took a stance on this. So like you see these legal references back to the 1700s, or recently there was a law I think that was rolled back to like 1864, right? And they say like, oh well, you know, here are these all these legal precedents for why abortion, you know, should be illegal now because of, you know, all of this historical understanding. And it's like, well, but their understanding of what constituted abortion and pregnancy is completely different from ours. And that's kind of part two that we're not getting to, but
yeah.
I mean, essentially, and here is spoiler alert, I'll just tell you what's coming up, but they didn't have ultrasounds. We have ultrasounds. They didn't have all of the early fetal monitoring, all of the stuff that we have now that gives us a sense of all of that early activity. And so historically, for millennia, up until about the middle of the 19th century, nobody, including church leaders of any faith, seemed to have any problem at all with you doing stuff up until quickening. Like life begins maybe when the breath of the baby first arrives. Some people kind of took that position, or else quickening, which is about 20 weeks when the mother first feels the baby moving. And so like, but all the stuff that we talk about as abortion would happen before 20 weeks. And so all of these things, you know, taking a pill, pennyroyal, throwing yourself down the stairs, a variety of terrible ways of making abortion happen that people used for millennia, they're not thinking of it as abortion, right? They don't know, like they don't know what's in there. And if you have a miscarriage early on, that doesn't really look like a baby. So maybe you just had a heavy period. Maybe your period's late because of anemia. Like there's a whole gray area in there. And so when we kind of turn the clock back to these laws, it's like, yeah, but their understanding of what the baby, what's a baby, what's abortion is totally different. So yeah. So when I saw one of our legislators from the highest court referring to laws from the 1700s, I was like, you have got to be kidding. Like,
that's is there no point historian? About ultrasounds, like that's such an obvious, like I didn't even think about it with that context. That's such a good point. You also mentioned that you studied French history. I thought I heard something that was like Napoleon was like, hey, I want more soldiers, hey, Pope, say that it's bad to use contraceptives or abortifacients.
I never heard that, Jen.
I heard that a couple years ago.
The Pope, I think that the first sort of religious like abortion is bad and like before birth is still a human life, that's not till like the middle of the 19th century, which is well after Napoleon. So yeah, I mean the French were at the forefront of using birth control. Their population started to, the population growth stagnated before other countries, but Napoleon, that wouldn't have been like Napoleon would have perceived that. It happens over the course of the 19th century when by the end of the 19th century, the French are like, wow, our population isn't growing compared to all of these other countries.
Okay. So. Yeah, that was just something I heard. And so I cannot verify. So
I mean, if you hear it on the internet, it's got to be true. I have never heard that. And I have never heard evidence that would support it, but that doesn't mean it's not true. Mm-hmm. I just don't have any evidence for it.
No, thank you. Momo. Oh, you're muted.
Oh, I couldn't get my microphone on there for a minute. I was just listening at my microphone, but it come on. But I think like you know, some of the things you guys were just talking about, things that happened before, population control, wanting more people, those are things that are happening now. We're seeing what's happening now. Like we're seeing that populations around the world are declining. Populations aren't able to keep up with, you know, the replacement levels. Older people are dying. People aren't being born. And now you see the most restrictive parts now of reproduction and saying, oh yeah, you have to bring the children. You have to procreate. And if you don't procreate, then if you have an oopsie, guess what? The oopsie is staying around. I recently have been going down the deep TikTok dive of the 4B movement in Korea. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with that movement
Tell me,
because
I
it's
don't
talking
know.
about, Okay, so the Forbidden Movement is just like these women that are protesting against the treatment of men in society. It is an amazing movement. They're saying we want to have children, we want to have marriages, we want to have all of these things because we're being treated when we have these children as second-class citizens. And it's just been amazing to me now because I don't live in America, but America's politics are very interesting. As somebody who lives in the Caribbean, like in the Caribbean, abortion is just still a taboo. It's not talked about. You just go to the doctor, you get what you have to do done. But in America now, especially, watching the moving parts of, like how one president was able to put his people in to support his cause, and now you have the most restrictive measures in place since God knows when. I'm like, it's in my head. I'm like, when these people in, I don't want to call out anybody by political party, but when are you voting? Are you really considering that your rights aren't being protected? You're not able to choose, and that bugs me. It bugs me
Well,
seriously.
just the hypocrisy of like, you don't want government control, yet you're controlling this so intensely. And Roni, you mentioned something where it's like, oh, like the replacement levels pop, but it's like, no, black and brown babies are being born. Like Kira Krakos has a great article from a couple years ago where she talks about, it's like the parable of the turtles, talking about like we're she brings up that she's concerned that some of our church leaders are reading conservative think tanks that talk about the like what's the word, I can't even think of all the right phrases, but just kind of like, oh, like we're not having enough babies, but it's like people are concerned that there aren't enough white babies being born,
I would say that there.
so it's like there's a lot of like racism tied up in it there as well, so just gets pretty complicated.
Well, and there
Yeah, I
always
would say that.
was, sorry. I
Okay,
was
go
gonna
ahead.
say, like,
Go ahead, Em.
even, I mean, abortion was a crime in this country for about 100 years. It was criminalized in the mid late 19th century until Roe v. Wade, and now we're back there. But you know, it was always racist, right? Because the people who had access to comparatively safer measures are people who have the money to pay bribes to doctors who are willing to do it safely. Or comparatively safely. I mean, we're still talking about the 19th century. It's not great. But you know, like the access to the better practitioners, the cleaner instruments, the safer products, money talks. And the people who had to take the more dangerous road were more likely to be people of color and definitely always poorer. And that's, I mean, and that's the upshot even today. I mean, honestly, like I live in Oregon. There are abortion clinics aplenty. And a lot of people are like, well, just travel to a state where it's legal. Easier said than done. How many people can just, like, oh, just travel to Oregon,
Afford,
go thousands of miles, stay? You know, like, who are the people who can do that? People who are more likely to be people of means and therefore statistically, yeah,
I like digging around on like Reddit, you are now seeing a pop-up of the aunties. And we're seeing like a lot of people saying, I'm pregnant. I can't have a child right now. And the aunties are coming in saying, how can we get you to our state? And I mean, that's something that, I don't think we should be at this point in human history that we have to rely on the aunties to get you safe reproductive care and choices about your reproduction and what when you want to have children. I was talking to a friend of mine who is from a different political party than I identify with, and that's the kindest way to say it. And I was saying, okay, Roe v. She wondered why when Roe v. Wade came out, why I was so petrified to go study or work in America. I was like, I am a Black woman. I have a chronic condition that makes it harder for me to get pregnant, makes it a little bit impossible for me. Like, there's nothing that says that when I get pregnant that I can carry a baby to term. And I might have to make a choice, depending on my health, to abort a child. And she was like, oh, I don't understand why you're scared. And I was telling her, Let's just put it this way. For every politician that there is a white conservative, his children, his daughters, his granddaughters, they're gonna get abortions. They're gonna go to the black work, the little back offices and have their nice safe abortions and go along with their married lives. And the mistresses are still gonna get their abortions because obviously they don't want the political scandal. But it's regular people, marginalized people. People who, as you were saying, that don't have the means, that are going to be the people that are suffering. I think, I as I said, like at this point in human history, why are we going back and not forward?
Well, it's funny you're
Something.
bringing.
Oh,
Oh,
go
sorry.
ahead.
Well, I was going to say bringing up the aunties too, because that again sort of ties us back to the historical forever and ever and ever, because people have been getting abortions since. I mean, we have written records, of what was going on. We have records of abortions and that people were doing this and trying all kinds of methods to do so. And that was always an auntie thing, right? It's word of mouth from women, and you only start to see it written. I mean, when are you going to see it written down? Well, it's men who are writing stuff down. So not until like after the printing press makes things cheap enough that women can be reading and buying books. And so it's really like the 1700s are when you start to see recipes in cookbooks for like stuff to make your period happen. Are you irregular? We can help. And like that's code, right? Like, oh, your period's late. Oh, golly, that's not healthy. You're 28. You should have a regular period. Let's help you out and get that period regular again. And take this, make this with pennyroyal, make this with tansy. So I think it is turning back the clock. It's going back exactly to what it once was, which was networks of women who had the knowledge or the access, and it is way suboptimal. We don't need to be in the Middle Ages. No.
Well, even within the medical field. So I'll share a story. I blogged about this ages ago. The blog post is called Baby Killer, and it tells about me in 2004 in Massachusetts, 16, 17 weeks pregnant, and I go to the doctor and there's no heartbeat. And my doctor, who at the time was 8 months pregnant, she said to me, "I lost a baby around the same stage that you're at. You don't want to do it here at the hospital. This is Brigham and Women's Hospital, the premier women's gynecological hospital in the world." She said, "You want to go to an abortion clinic because you will heal faster. They will know exactly what they're doing. They have so much more practice, and it will be easier on you physically and psychologically to get this taken care of by the very best people." So I found myself, this Mormon mother of three, calling an abortion clinic in Newton, Massachusetts, and making an appointment and showing up and having an old man with a poster of a fetus scream at me and call me baby killer. And never in a million years did I ever think that I would need those services. And I was so grateful. I was so grateful for the competent medical care. And as someone who, that was my fourth miscarriage, but my latest one, I healed really quickly from that one. And in some ways, psychologically, it was more traumatic because of, being called a baby killer. But the care that I received was so good. And when I was in that clinic looking around at all the women in there, nobody wanted to be there. No one wanted to be there. Everybody who was there felt like they had to be there. And so for me, moving forward, I suddenly thought, I will always have to be pro-choice, because if you're not pro-choice, then those clinics don't exist. So even if you are opposed to people terminating a pregnancy, if you recognize that women can have a pregnancy end and need to evacuate that fetus in a safe manner, you need those clinics.
And to help the health of the mother,
Yes.
like that part of it is so gets so lost. What I was going to bring up earlier, so Heather, thanks so much for sharing that experience. Two thoughts are coming to mind. One is, I was running errands and I ended up driving past the Planned Parenthood in St. Paul, the town next to me. And as I was driving around, I was like, oh, I like went to a rally here 2 years ago. And then like driving by, I drove kind of slow, and there were a couple protesters. They were men. And so like I thought of your article that I'd read, Heather, of just where it's like, get a job, volunteer, retiree, rather than standing outside of a clinic holding a sign. So feeling sad about that. Thing two, though, a different Planned Parenthood, Provo, Utah. And I brought this up to a few people, and they're like, oh my gosh, you're right. I did not get married when I was in Utah. But I know people who did, including my cousin. She would get her birth control through Planned Parenthood in Provo. So she had insurance through BYU, but could not get birth control. She was married, married in the temple, could not get birth control through BYU Student Services, and would have to go to the Planned Parenthood in Provo. And I brought this up to other people, like, oh yeah, that's what I had to do too. So I don't know if like the BYU clinic like referred people to Planned Parenthood, but just like that, like hypocrisy. I don't know if hypocrisy is the right word, but just like that, like work around
It
extra step.
is. It wasn't
Yeah.
until Rex Lee became president of BYU and Rex Lee, as a lawyer, recognized that that was violating all sorts of laws.
Okay.
And only after Rex Lee could you get birth control via the health center or health clinic, whatever they call it.
Okay, but Rex Lee was like pre like 2007 or 8 when my cousin was at BYU. So I'm like, I am confused. Like, yeah, so surprised about
No.
that.
The thing about it is that obviously that we take great protections for me being on the podcast, not naming names and naming institutions that I'm affiliated with. But I remember sitting in a class a couple of semesters ago, and I was considered, I took this class twice because I failed it when I had COVID, and I came back again and took it the next time. And I remember sitting in this class and being so shunned for some of the progressive thoughts I had. We were talking about families and why families were so good and these things. And I was talking about abortion. And I was like talking about birth control. And I was like, you should be able to get birth control because that's just something that happens here. You go to your doctor here in Barbados, you tell your doctor you want to get the birth control, the doctor gives you a prescription. That simple. And when I was talking about, like everybody's desires not to have five children, everybody's desires not to have six children. Some people can't afford that, but they just have it because there's no birth control in place. The women looked at me like, oh my God, what did this black girl from nowhere in the world say? Like, well, how dare she sit and talk about our five children? I say, you know what? I wish a lot of women in the church recognize that they can take a really proactive stance on birth control and when they want to reproduce, not just saying, oh yeah, the Lord willed it for us to have six babies. No. If it's not the time, just say it's not the time. But I think in our own Mormon thinking, we don't think that we have a choice. We have to say everything that happens now, happens because the Lord willed it. And we don't sometimes take into consideration that women have choice. We see procreation as a man thing, and the women is just a passenger, I guess, if that's the way I'm thinking about it.
I mean, if I can say for my own, I have two children and I had horrible pregnancies. I had hyperemesis for all 9 months and I was miserable and so sick the
Wait,
whole
what
time.
is hyperemesis? I don't even know.
Oh, it just means super puking. Hyper meaning a lot.
Oh,
So it's just like, it's like
Oh.
morning sickness, but like you're truly
That's
vomiting
what
all the time. Like, yeah,
I
like
see.
Princess Catherine. I'm a
Yeah,
lot
like
like the
Princess
Princess of
Catherine had
Wales.
it. Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, it's like morning sickness, except much
Wow.
more severe, and it lasts the whole time. So like,
Oh my
I could puke
gosh.
7 times a day, kind of a thing. And so it was horrible. And so after one child, I was like, we had agreed, oh, like we want to have a sibling for our kid. And this is where the God thing comes in. I'm like, look, God, if you want me to have a bigger family, it's gonna have to be twins because we have one more pregnancy left. And honestly, if that pregnancy hadn't been able to carry to term, we were like, okay. that was our sign. We will now be pursuing other options for building our family or contributing in different ways to our community, because it was so horrible. I don't know. So when you said like leaving it up to God, I'm like, yeah, like recognize my agency in that, like, we were willing to have one more pregnancy, but I was like, multiply the eggs if you care that much, God. And you know what? God was fine with us having two. So.
I feel like I grew up where like birth control was like, okay. Like when you're married, da, 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 like all those things. And then I feel like it's since retracted a little bit, like in a recent conversation, not super recent, a few months ago, a conversation with my mom, she ended up bringing up that, like IUDs, where it's like, well, IUDs are bad because you are somewhat pregnant and then it doesn't. Where it's just like, what? So, and it just is this like, what? And just thinking about like Alabama, the like, are the in vitro eggs that are discarded, is that a human life? So, and we don't need to split hairs, but
No, but it is like, that's the question. And I think that that's also the question that you look at historically in the church and in the church today, because if you're starting to say like, oh, well, if our spirits always existed, you know, and I don't want to make that choice for anyone else, but I just, from my own perspective, when I think of the church's position of like, there are situations where this is the right choice. And like Heather was saying, I was like, yeah. And if you want that to be true, then you need to have a safe place for that situation. And also, I mean, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but I just think like, you know, no woman should have to prove she was raped. No one should have to prove incest.
Yeah.
It's between you and God. You know, and you know the truth, and it's not, I'm like, I don't feel like my beliefs are in any way contrary to the church's official position. I think in general abortion, I would rather that happening.
Well, and but I love how you said that. So like between you and God and between you and your healthcare provider. So that could be
that's how it's supposed to be. I've spoken, I can't remember. I did speak on the blog about it. Like, disclaimer warning, I would have been sexually assaulted at 18 and 19, 2 years that were just formative years of me trying to figure life out, by older people. And I think about the fact, what if these had led to a pregnancy? And before that, those 2 ages, I was very much, you know, life is life. We need to preserve life. We need to do all this stuff. And then when those experiences happened to me, I was like, okay, the shift in thought. And I was like, it shouldn't have taken a big event like that for me to shift in thought. But that was my motivation to start seeing the world through different lenses. And a lot of people don't have that experience because they're stuck in the, I don't want to say the Mormon bubble, where we don't question anything that doesn't make us feel safe or are tied to the church or organization. But I think, what if I had become a mother at 18? I couldn't do it. If I could become a mother at 19, I couldn't do it. And I would probably be where Heather was, going to the clinic. Well, we don't have Planned Parenthood here in Barbados. So, but I would have probably been going to, you know, that doctor's office and choosing to have an abortion because I was not matured enough to take care of myself. So how could I take care of somebody else? And that changed my opinion from being so strict on pro-life to being very much pro-choice and being pro-understanding of women and the complex situations that they have to make when they're choosing to keep a pregnancy or to end a pregnancy. So I that's just my experience, I feel like.
Well, I think, I mean, I so appreciate you sharing that. And I think part of the issue also is that because the taboo is so strong within the church, there's no room to have these conversations with other believing members who are active, you know, and to say, because like when I was pregnant, I thought about abortion. I really wanted my children. I really wanted, like, they were planned, wanted, prayed for, begged for pregnancies. And then my experience was so debilitatingly horrible. Like, I cannot, if you've never been there, I cannot put into words the level of dehydration, the emotional exhaustion, the hunger, like you're always hungry, but then if you eat, you throw up. And like, I mean, it was the most physically horrible experience of my life. And there was no way out but through or ending it. And there were moments in my life where I thought about it and I thought, I can't do this. I cannot keep going through this. And I was able to, and I love my kids, and I'm so grateful. But I feel like even ever saying the words, like, I mean, even Heather, like when Heather shared, and of course her circumstances are, you know, like good, you know, or whatever we would say, like, you know, I don't think anyone in the church would be like, how dare you? And, you know, I think like, but I don't think there's any space for to have a conversation where you would ever say, like, I've thought about it, and maybe in circumstance X, I can't say I wouldn't, or now that I've lived through this, I understand that perspective really differently. And I feel like there's no room for that conversation whatsoever because we are so strict on how this isn't allowed to have nuance, but it does have nuance. And I think that God knows that it has nuance. At least Heavenly Mother
Yeah. Yeah.
does.
No,
That makes me a heretic.
absolutely. Yeah, no. And thanks for naming that. It's so difficult to have these conversations. I've had them a lot because I'm the like token liberal in my family. Like I remember years ago an uncle being like, if you're a Democrat, like that means you're pro-abortion and like you want to kill babies. Like system telling me this when I'm like 19. I'm like, okay, like but just how it so quickly goes to like you're bad because you yeah. And I feel like I became extremely pro-choice after being pregnant. I felt like I was like on the surface, like, yeah, but like I had like relatively easy pregnancies. I think I already talked about this, but after like gestating, birthing, nursing children, and like what you shared, I'm like chose it, like I wanted to get pregnant. This was a planned thing. I wouldn't wish this on anyone who didn't want to be pregnant. And I think I already shared this too, but someone in my family said, like, it's just 9 months of your life. And I was enraged.
No.
Oh, easy to
Oh
say.
my gosh.
I
She
kept
just said,
telling Mark of
"Man,
vomit. Sorry, my thinking of my live young, they're home, but I kept telling Mark with my second pregnancy and I vomited 100 times in 3 months and then I stopped keeping track. So I'm just like, oh yeah, you tell me though.
only 9 months.
It's just
Only
9
9
months. Have
months.
you ever
It's
like
just 9 months.
vomited constantly and you have vomit in your hair and like, it's just 3 months. You just are like
It's
debilitating
just 9 months.
weak, can't move.
See, I
Like,
think we need
yeah,
to, yeah, reduce the ego, reduce the patriarchy, reduce the like, we don't know all the situations. So how can we have grace, and support? Because some people will choose to like keep the baby, some people choose to give the baby up for adoption, but that's part of pro-choice too. Is also do not have to carry the baby. Because I think that's where it feels complicated is like if they truly had the choice, would they carry the baby to then give it away? I don't know. And not my choice, but like, how do we make sure that people are having options? Don't we believe in agency? Ha 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 ha.
I think many believe that agency only goes so far when it makes when you make the choices that goes with the majority.
But some people don't enjoy. Yeah. Anyway, so, yeah, we can to be continued. Let's any final thoughts before I do my Exponent 2 plug? Thank you so much, M. Thank you,
This was super
Heather.
fun.
Thank
Let's
you,
do this again. I'll do
Ramona.
something funny and light next time instead
Haha.
of something
Yes,
deeply horrifying.
sister. Sister Seth. Aunt Agony Aunt?
Oh,
Aunt?
Agony Aunt, you know, like Dear Abby kind of a
Yes.
thing. Yeah. So her
Yes.
name was
So
Sister
good.
Sassy.
Sister Sassy. Love it. Which is great because that goes with Ramona's Sassily Day Saint. So we got it all. We got the sass, we got the spice, we have the heart because we want to keep these conversations going. Exponent 2 is a nonprofit. It's our 50th anniversary this year. And we're excited with our spring issue. I help with the magazine, so that's all been on my mind. But a lot of the foundational members wrote pieces and up to present day people who are part of the organization. So that should be a great magazine. So look out for that. And we have a blog. We have a pod. This is the podcast. We have a monthly newsletter. Again, we're a 501c3. If you want to help fund the revolution, we're working toward an endowment, $50,000 endowment. And so it could be tax deductible if you want to help that out that way. But we also, yeah, come participate. xoneii.org, and have a good evening.